This is episode 358 with running coach, my former collegiate competitor, host of the Morning Shakeout podcast and newsletter, and recent third place finisher at the 2024 National Masters Road Mile, Mario Fraioli. Welcome to the Strength Running Podcast. Our goal here is to surround you with the same experts as pro runners. So if you want to learn from coaches, physical therapists, strength experts, sports psychologists, and other thought leaders, you're in the right place. I'm your host, Coach Jason Fitzgerald. I ran 4 years of cross country and track for Connecticut College, ran a 2:39 marathon PR, and now I'm the head coach of strength running and a monthly columnist for Trail Runner magazine. You can learn more about me and strength running at strengthrunning.com. This show couldn't exist without the support of our partners. I hope that you'll use their discount codes to improve your health and training. You should definitely hook yourself up with some free electrolytes from our sponsor, Element. They're offering a free gift with your purchase at drinklmnt.com/strengthrunning. And this does not have to be your first purchase. You're going to get a sample pack with every flavor, so you can try them all before deciding what you like best. If you're not familiar, Element is my favorite way to hydrate. They make electrolytes for athletes and low-carb folks with no sugar, no artificial ingredients or colors. I'm now in the habit of giving away boxes of Element at group runs whenever I attend in Denver or Boulder, and everyone loves this stuff. It can be very helpful as a way to prevent dehydration when you're running long or running a hard workout. If you sometimes feel overly tired or you get headaches, cramps, or sleeplessness after long runs or workouts, you might have an electrolyte imbalance or a deficiency. You can boost your performance and your recovery, especially in the heat, with Element. They're the exclusive hydration partner to Team USA Weightlifting, and quite a few professional baseball, hockey, and basketball teams are on regular subscriptions. Plus, Element is my go-to morning beverage if I've frequented one of Denver's many breweries the night before and I just want my morning to feel a little smoother. Check them out at drinklmnt.com/strengthrunning. You'll get your free sample pack gift with your purchase, and you can get your hydration optimized for the upcoming season. A big thanks to Two Before. Get yourself a whopping 30% discount on their 20-pack and multi-packs at twobefore.com for their all-natural, scientifically proven pre-workout with code JASON. Two Before, which is the numeral two followed by the word before, is made from New Zealand blackcurrant berries, which improves vasodilation or blood flow, just like beetroot. But they also improve recovery after exercise by managing oxidative stress through their unique ratio of antioxidants, which also have a nice side benefit of supporting your immune system. Now, the main antioxidant is called anthocyanin, which I hadn't heard of before, but is actually more present in New Zealand blackcurrant berries than tart cherries, raspberries, blackberries, or blueberries. Plus, Two Before tastes delicious. I love products that are both good for your performance and good for your overall health. Get yourself 30% off any multi-pack with code JASON at twobefore.com. They have a caffeinated and non-caffeinated version, which is great depending on your caffeine tolerance. Me, I love having the caffeinated version with 120 milligrams of caffeine in place of coffee before my morning runs, especially if I'm in a rush and I don't have time to brew a pot of coffee. Go to numeral2before.com with code JASON for 30% off your order of any multi-pack. My guest today is friend and former competitor Mario Fraioli. Mario is one of the most competitive masters runners in the country, having run the 2023 Boston Marathon in 2:34, and just a few months prior to that, an indoor mile in 4:30. Mario is also the host of the Morning Shakeout podcast and writes the incredibly popular newsletter of the same name. You can sign up for that at themorningshakeout.com. Our conversation today focuses on the mile and how Mario just put together an amazing season to finish third at last month's National Masters Road Mile Championships. He was in it to win it, and I love that mindset. We're going to talk more about how Mario structured his preseason, because the season before the season is very important, especially when you're going after a national title. We're going to talk about the workouts he ran, the mileage that he held for this season, tune-up races, and finally, how the championship race went down. This conversation is a case study in amazing planning, showing the thought process and care that Mario applied to his attempt to be the fastest miler over 40 in the country. Without further delay, please enjoy my conversation with Mario Fraioli. Mario, welcome back to the podcast. So excited you're here. We were just talking offline about you racing the mile as a masters and how that's a little bit challenging. And I'm so excited to get into this with you.
Yeah, thanks for having me again. I don't know what appearance this is on your podcast. I'm going to guess at least three, but I always enjoy catching up with you and chatting about all things like training and racing and running. But yeah, I am in my early 40s, 42 to be exact, and I am racing the mile again. If you had told me 20 years ago that that's what I would be, I'd be doing 20 years from then, I would have laughed right in your face. But here I am. Once a runner, I guess they say, right? Once a miler, always a miler.
Oh, that's right. You know, when I was in high school, Mario, my AOL Instant Messenger screen name ended with 1609 because that's the number of meters in a mile, and it was my favorite event. And, you know, I just have such a soft spot for the mile. It was my favorite event in high school. Loved racing the mile when it was held in college, but usually the 1500. It just seems to me like it's the distance that captures a lot of people's attention, imagination, and it has such a rich history. And, you know, as a fellow masters runner myself, I've been toying with the idea of maybe, you know, trying to crack five one more time as a 40-year-old, which might be kind of fun. But you recently did something really interesting. You went after the National Masters Mile Championship. Mm-hmm. What a big goal. I am so far removed from that level of competition that it seems very intimidating to me. So I want to get into it. I want to talk about the race, your training, the thought process ahead of time with you even thinking, I'm going to go after this. Maybe we can start from the beginning. Like, when did you have this idea? Because this idea is usually not what most, you know, even competitive masters runners are thinking about.
Yeah. It's a good place to start. It was a few years ago in my late 30s when I was 39, to be exact. I just started getting excited about this next decade and moving up to the master's ranks, because as a 39-year-old open athlete competing against, you know, 22-23-year-old kids out of college, it's not really fun. I don't care if you're racing a mile or a marathon. You know, they have fresher legs. I mean, you know, as an older runner, you have experience and that can go a long way. But I was really excited to join the master's ranks because at least here in the Bay Area and certainly nationally, there are a lot of master's only races or master's separate master starts for races. And it just feels like the playing field gets a little bit more level, you know, unless Abdi Abdurrahman shows up or something like that, you know, former pro who hasn't let go of it yet. But for the most part, you know, it levels the playing field if you are on the competitive side of things. So I started thinking about masters racing in my late 30s and what I wanted to do. And at that point, I wasn't really interested in continuing to go after the marathon and dedicating that much training time to it. But the mile just has always been my favorite event as well, for all the reasons that you just described a little while ago, going back all the way to, you know, the gym class mile, before I was ever on a track team. I always loved that. And it wasn't necessarily the running or the distance. I certainly didn't train for it, but I just loved to race. And I felt like that was just such a great distance to race, even at that age. And then eventually, when I found long distance running and I ran cross country and then I went through a track season, on some level, I love it all, but the mile just had my heart from the very beginning. I think it's that perfect blend of strength and speed. You know, it's drama unfolding over four laps on the track. It's a few minutes long, so it just requires a high level of fitness and focus. And, you know, I've just always loved that. And I feel like for a lot of us who did run in high school and college, and maybe even for a little while as an open athlete out of school, I mean, you get away from the track in general, unless you're competing at like an Olympic trials level, which you're like, well, I'm probably not going to touch those times anymore. Or, you know, what does it matter if I shave another, you know, 10 seconds off of my, you know, 5K time on the track or 3 or 4 seconds off of my mile? And I certainly felt that way, you know, in my 20s and through most of my 30s. But, you know, with this fresh start as a 40-year-old, and there's a masters racing scene and separate masters national championships, I was like, well, I'm like, if I had a clean slate, what would I do? I'm like, I go back to the mile. I've always loved it. And something about time, I think, helps with that too, because I'm not comparing myself to what I did 20 years ago in terms of like the times that I ran. I'm not touching those. It's not happening, but I can still be competitive. And at the end of the day, for me, I love to compete. I don't love to chase the clock, and the mile feels like the best outlet for that.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, you're bringing up all these memories of racing the mile, and you know how often I did it when I look back on my high school and college days, and just thinking back to how amazing the event was. When was the mile championship that you raced? Was it in February or March of this year?
No, the Masters Road Mile Championship was in May 19th, I believe. So not that long ago, just a few weeks back.
Okay. So it was a little sooner than I thought. Let's go back to maybe like last fall at some point. When did you start sort of somewhat training for this mile race? You know, did you have one big long season of gradually leading into it? Did you have like two shorter seasons where you did something very specific in the first season? Kind of walk us through how you broke up the time.
Yeah, I'll go back a little bit further than that, actually, because it started when I turned 40. So at 39, very late at 39, I ran an open track meet in San Francisco near where I live. And I ran the 1500 meters. And that was the culmination of like a mini season for me. And that race was in April, but I had started training kind of seriously in like January. We don't have winter here really. So the outdoor track meet, we don't have indoor track either, but the outdoor track meets, the open meets start in January. So I ran a 1500 off of, I wouldn't say no training, but certainly no specific training that was geared toward that race. I was like, let me just like rip off the Band-Aid, see what I can run for 1500 at the Cal Open meet in January of 2022. And I was 39 years old, and I ran 416 is what I ran at that meet. And it was so fun. It was super exciting. I mean, I was in, you know, I'd seated myself appropriately. I thought I could run probably around like 415. And I was in the race, and it was just such a thrill to be in the race again. I was like, yeah, this is it. I've missed this. I hadn't done this in, you know, in years. And I was like, I'm going to work toward this meet at the beginning of April called the Mike Finelli Classic in San Francisco. It's a popular kind of college open meet, and they have something like 20 heats of the 1500. So I could also seed myself appropriately, even though I'd be in the race against younger people, which I was, like literally kids half my age, and even younger, you know, at that point. I'm like, I could see how much I improved from January to April with a little bit of focused work. So I did that, and I ended up running, my goal is to run sub 410, and I ran 409.2 or something like that. And it was really, really exciting. And that was the end of my season. And it was right before I turned 40. It was like, I don't know, 6 weeks before I turned 40. And there just weren't many other opportunities beyond that. I had some other things going on that summer, but I got a taste of it. And I was like, this was a lot of fun. When I turned 40, I'm going to focus on, you know, on this. So that was 2022. 2023, you know, I'm 40 years old. And one race that I had always paid attention to was the Masters Mile at the Boston Indoor Games. So I'm from Massachusetts, where I grew up. I ran collegiately in New England. As you know, being a fellow collegiate runner in New England, great indoor track scene. Whether you're a collegiate athlete, open athlete, elite, doesn't matter. I mean, there's opportunities everywhere in New England. And I remember the Reebok Grand Prix, which is now the New Balance Grand Prix, always had a Masters Mile. And I was always intrigued by it. But it was early on in the meet. And so you'd have all these, you know, old men, old women running the mile before all the pros came on. I was like, well, that's really cool. They get to be part of the pro meet. They have their name on the bib. There weren't many people in the stands, but what a cool what a cool atmosphere and environment. And they had that meet for many years at the Reggie Lewis Center, which I know you know really, really well. And I had been thinking about that, you know, about that event in my late 30s. I'm like, that would be cool to go back and run indoor track, because indoor track was always my favorite. And we don't have it here in California where I live now. And I hadn't been on an indoor track in a long, long, long time. But I was like, it'd be really cool to go back and race indoors and be part of that Masters mile and be part of that meet and have my dad, my family, and my friends who still live in Massachusetts, like, come watch me race. So I'd been thinking about that race for a while. And I decided after that 2022 season, I'm like, yep, this is definitely what I'm doing. And the race that I really want to focus on for next year when I am 40 is that Masters mile at the New Balance Indoor Grand Prix, which it was the first year that they had the event at New Balance's new indoor track facility, which is, you know, amazing. So I reached out to the race director at the end of 2022 and threw my name in the hat. And they said, yeah, we'd love to have you. Booked my travel, went back and raced that in 2023. And we ran right before the women's 60 meter hurdles. And I believe, was it Sydney McLaughlin was in that prelim? So the stands were full. We had like a full house for that. And it was just, you know, it was super exciting to be in that race. I ended up finishing second to Phil Stead, who's the reigning national champion. And I'm just all, you know, I've been all in on the mile, you know, since then, since before then, you know, really. So, you know, to get back to your original question, kind of concurrently with that, when I turned 40, I joined the West Valley Track Club here in San Francisco. And the West Valley Track Club has long had a very strong Masters racing team on the men's side, 40 plus. They'd won some national titles in cross country individually and as a team, and just have guys racing different distances year round. And it's been an awesome fit for me. I train, you know, on my own, mostly with a few of the guys, you know, sometimes during the week or on the weekends when we can get together. But we, you know, we run a full cross country season, much like we did when we were in college. A few of the guys are focusing on track, and it's been fun to have that be part of a team again, and other folks who are interested in the same things. And that's only, I think, fueled my own fire and added to my own interests to pursue this. Cause I've got a teammate, Mark Ewan, who's in his 50s, and he's running 4.0s for 1500, in his 50s. And it starts getting the wheels turning in my own head. I'm like, oh, well, if he's doing that in his 50s, like, you know, what's possible for me? And that curiosity has led all of it. But joining the West Valley Track Club was huge. And then I raced the last 2 years, I raced cross country in the fall for both of them. So pretty typical for kind of an American track buildup. If you're a, you know, collegiate athlete, you run cross country in the fall, which is what we did. So it's building that base and getting really, really strong. We had our national championship beginning of December, took a few weeks down. And then, you know, basically at the beginning of the year is when I, you know, kind of started tuning my training a little bit more toward the mile and some races that I had laid out for the spring. So that was a very long-winded and rambling answer, but hopefully it got to the point of your question.
I appreciate the context, because, you know, it's good to know that this was something that captured your imagination for a couple of years. You had it sort of on the back burner for a little while. And it also illustrates, I think, the value of having a team, people that you train with, a group to not only keep you motivated, you know, like you're a pretty self-motivated guy. You don't need other people to like get you out the door or to convince you to set a big goal, you know? So it's not really motivation, but it's more, you know, this something bigger than motivation. It's this drive. It's this expanding of possibilities. Like you were saying, with this teammate of yours who's in his 50s and he's running really fast 1500s, it just makes you think that, oh, this is possible. And it just reminds me of competing on a team when I was in high school and college, because you're around all these other guys. You know, in my case, I was usually, you know, somewhere like the fourth to seventh cross country guy. And that always was actually kind of fun for me because like there was room to grow. There were people to chase. There were examples that I could look up to. And there, it's always beneficial to be surrounded by people who are a little bit better than you.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And we're fortunate to have a great squad with West Valley. And there are plenty of guys who are around my age, if not a bit older than me, that I look up to as positive examples that I want to try and emulate now that I'm in my 40s and only getting older from here on out.
Only getting older. It doesn't go the other way, does it?
No, it does not go the other way, unfortunately. you start to realize that more when you get into like your fourth and fifth decades, I think.
Yeah. I was laughing a little bit too when you were saying how the Masters Mile was early in the day. It was one of the earlier events, and thinking to myself, well, of course, you know, we start to get tired later in the day, Mario. We need these races to be a little bit earlier. So that works out.
Yeah. Well, I mean, my hope is that maybe one of these years they'll make it the marquee event and everyone will stick around and, you know, watch the old men and women battle it out over, you know, over the 1 mile distance. But, you know, guy can dream.
I love it. I'm also struck by this idea of you basically strung together multiple successful seasons leading into your go at the Mile Championship. And I've been talking about this concept of the season before the season. A lot of people, if they want to have a breakthrough performance, it can be really helpful and often necessary to have a successful season first. You know, and as prior cross-country runners, we know that your cross-country season ain't going to be anything if you don't have a good summer base training season. And you're probably not going to have a good outdoor track season if you don't have a pretty decent indoor track season. And I was wondering if you could speak to this idea and how you used, you know, the American college track system of sort of going from cross country to indoor track, because I've always found this to be one of the most effective ways of development, of improving, and of just experiencing progress in your running. Is let's have slightly different goals, but constantly cycle from one season to another season. And you went from a strength season to a speed season, which I think is fantastic. I mean, what is the benefit of that, and how do you think that helped you?
I mean, the short answer is variety. And before I go deeper into my own answer, you and I are both coaches, and a lot of age group athletes train for the marathon or the half marathon. And many of them who didn't run in college and have that type of training background, it's marathon cycle after marathon cycle after marathon cycle. And it's our job as coaches to help them break out of that and say, hey, let's take a season off of the marathon and try and get faster at 5K, 10K. Because then when you go back to the marathon, you're going to go in sharper, you're going to be more efficient, you're going to have better racing skills, and it's going to make you a better marathoner. But the opposite is also true. I mean, not that everyone has to train for a marathon, but if you are focused on 5K, 10K, if you spend a season of your year, even if you don't race, just building strength, not doing that faster, more specific work, and just really laying down a strong foundation, you're going to be able to do much more with your 5K, 10K specific training. So these things complement, you know, one another. And if we go back to that American model, which we see in high school and college, and you can even replicate it to a degree, you know, post-collegially, certainly as a master's athlete, where you have cross-country season in the fall, it really is about getting strong. You can get on the track, but you don't have to. And more often than not, you don't. So you're not chasing splits either. It's more about getting that effort right, developing, you know, your racing skills. Your volume's going to be a little bit higher, but you're not ripping off 200 repeats at the track or 400 repeats at the track or that kind of thing. But when you go back to do those things, like in the track season, you know, all of a sudden you've got this huge aerobic base, and like the bigger that base, the more that you can build, you know, upon it. So I think it's, you know, I think it's important, if that is going to be, you know, your focus, to lay that foundation first. And really that's what I was able to do by racing cross country in the fall, taking a little bit of a break just so I could reset, you know, mentally, take care of some little niggles, you know, et cetera. But then, you know, when I got into my quote unquote indoor season, which is just, well, let's just call it the winter months, and I started shifting the focus of, you know, my workouts, I was able to just get so much more out of them because I hadn't been doing that stuff and I wasn't stale on it. And it was just exciting to like change the stimulus. And I had areas where I could grow and develop. And that was really, really exciting. And I think it's just a good, you know, good way to go about structuring your year in that way, where you have different emphases at different times.
You have just very eloquently described something that I have been trying to describe for years, which is the value of variety and training for different races, because you're going to do different workouts, you're going to have slightly different volumes, and you know, you get a little bit of a different physiological benefit from certain types of training. You know, you obviously get a lot of strength and aerobic fitness from base training or training for a marathon. And then as you transition to some of the middle distances, you sort of layer on some speed work and turn some of that endurance into just great middle distance race times. You know, I think a lot of runners understand the idea of building a base of endurance, of mileage, of aerobic fitness. But a lot of the times, adult runners get pretty far away from running very fast. And I like a base of speed too. And that doesn't mean you're doing a lot of speed work. It's more that you're doing strides regularly. Maybe you're doing short hill reps from hill sprints to 30, 45 seconds. And you're never really spending a lot of time away from ever running very, very fast. Can you talk about how, what you think of that and how you might have incorporated that before, you know, your winter season? Because I think, you know, if you're going to train for a mile, yeah, having that cross country season, that base of strength is really important. But, you know, if you had gone 6 months without running strides or some sort of short repetition, you probably would struggle a little bit, right?
Yeah. I mean, like you, I've been doing this for a long time. So strides for me personally, and for the athletes I coach, they're always a part of the week. Doesn't matter where we are in the year, what we're training for. Like, we're going to do strides either as a primer for workouts, as part of our warm up for workouts, as speed maintenance throughout the year. Like, we never get too far, you know, away from that. So during that cross country season where I was doing a lot of grass repeats, hills on dirt, you know, longer, if I was doing tempos, it was usually like off the roads and on dirt. I was still doing strides a few times a week to maintain some semblance of, you know, of leg turnover. When I flipped the switch over the winter months to training specifically for the mile, knowing that that speed was going to be important, I also didn't want to overdo it. So I was just being very intentional about strides and when I was doing them. I did bring, you know, some, much like you just described, some shorter hill repeats into the mix before I was going to hit the track for any intervals, you know, type of things. And then the other thing I brought in that I didn't really do during cross country season, but that I did a lot of when I was a track athlete in college, was drills. And I was doing those 2 times a week outside of workouts, but then also as part of my warm up for workouts. And before I even started thinking about speed or fitness, I was thinking about movement, because when you get older, the risks are higher, especially when you have a lot of miles, you know, on your body. You still got to run fast, but you got to be careful about how you do it. You also can't get away with as much as you did when you were younger. So you need to make sure that you're moving well. So that was a big emphasis for me when I flipped the switch over the winter months toward training for the mile. Before I did any interval workouts or anything like that, I spent, you know, a good 6 weeks doing a lot of drills, strides, short hills. And a lot of that was just focused on being able to move well, taking like what I was doing during the drills and translating that to the strides and translating that to how I was running, you know, uphill and what I was getting for engagement, you know, out of my body. And honest to God, I don't think I've moved that well in 20 to 25 years. Just focusing on that for 6 weeks. And I got a long way off of that because I had this really solid, you know, aerobic base. But I mean, I didn't do, you know, a hill repeat over like 35 seconds. I didn't do a stride over like, you know, 20 seconds. But when I started doing, you know, more traditional, you know, types of workouts, I noticed a difference in terms of how I was moving right away from just spending that time like emphasizing it. So, you know, to get back to your question, whether you're training for the mile, you're training for 5K, 10K, half marathon, marathon, like you've got to keep some form of what I would just call neuromuscular maintenance, like in the mix. And the easiest way to do that is the form of strides or uphill strides. You know, you can still do drills, but, you know, thinking about moving well and having that translate to, you know, not only your workouts, but all the other paces that you're running up and down the spectrum.
It seems like there's a progression here from drills to strides to short hill reps to finally getting to the actual thing that most runners would consider training, which is hard workouts on the track. And I have found a lot of runners go straight to the track. They go straight to the hard workouts. Is the goal just movement preparation or just getting your body comfortable with moving very fast, with being snappy, with producing power? You know, like, what's the thought process between this transition of movement prep, comfort with speed before you get into the hard workouts?
Yes, all of those things. And I felt it was important to do it in small doses because you minimize that risk of something going awry, an injury, especially if you haven't moved in that way in many, many years. Much easier to do it in, like, you know, very small doses before you try to extend it, because that's when people get hurt. You know, they'll all of a sudden be like, I'm training for the mile, so I'm going to go to the track and do, you know, 400s at my mile pace. Well, if you haven't, like, prepped your tissues for that stress, if you haven't, like, worked on turning your legs over that quickly, like, you're gonna get hurt. Like, there's, like, no question about it. So a lot of that, like, a lot of those foundational elements were, you know, to help me to get more out of the workouts, like, once I did them. And that even, like, some of those strides, like, that's, I would put my spikes on, you know, just to get used to having them on my feet again and getting that sensation underneath my feet. But I was only doing, you know, 80 to 100 meter strides in them, you know, at first, just to, like, get that proprioception down again. Like, it's different than running in flats, right? So it's like just kind of getting that feel for, like, how my body felt after running, you know, that effort, even for, like, 80 meters type of deal. So it was very, like, preparatory in nature.
It strikes me that there are so many similarities to building mileage as well as getting comfortable with hard workouts. You know, you have to gradually increase your mileage, but you also have to gradually progress your way into some of these really hard workouts, especially at our age, because, like you were saying, it's just, you know, the movement aspect of things, it starts to deteriorate, especially if you haven't done it in a long time. I know a lot of, you know, adult runners who don't have that background in track might not be running strides regularly, might have never done any drills. Would you say that drills and strides might be beneficial for everyone? Like, is it almost that clear cut?
Yeah, 100%. And I think we've, like, not to go off on too much of a tangent, but I think we fail in that regard in just distance running in general, all the way down to, you know, the youth, high school, college level. I mean, if you are a serious swimmer, or you are serious into strength training and you're working with a coach, you don't just go in and start swimming laps in the pool. You do a lot of drill work and you learn technique and how to move in the water and get a feel for it. And then you start to do the workouts. If you're in the weight room, you don't just go and deadlift 500 pounds right away. You get the technique down, right? And you start with, like, the bar. Maybe you don't even start with the bar, and then you put a little bit on and you cue yourself. We don't do that in running. I mean, in those sports, it's like, move well and then move often. In running, we just want to move often. And that's where people get themselves into trouble. So I've definitely been guilty of that myself, you know, in the past. So as I was thinking about putting this season together for myself and using myself as kind of my own guinea pig, like, that was my thinking, was like, let's focus on moving well. Like, I'm going to spend 6 weeks, like, just focusing on moving well. And then I'm going to start, like, increasing that, you know, the duration of my workouts, the amount of time that I'm spending at speed. And I was just like prepping my body for what I knew was going to be, like, very demanding work. Because, you know, when you're running the mile, yes, it's a hell of a lot shorter than a 5K or 10K or half marathon or a marathon in terms of duration. But when you're moving at those speeds, the impact on your body is, like, so great. You know, the velocity is much higher. You're on, you know, you're running turns. And I was just like, I've got to prep my body, like, you know, both, like, structurally, you know, my soft tissue, my bones, like, I've got to get it ready for, like, what I'm about to, like, throw on it. And I hadn't done that for, like, many, many years. And I think because I hadn't, I responded really well to it, because it was essentially a novel, you know, stimulus for me. But when I started doing workouts, I was like, shit, I'm moving so well right now. Like I could just feel it. Like I don't know how to describe it other than like I just felt like I was eating up ground. I was so efficient. You know, I was really relaxed when I was running, you know, intervals at, you know, close to goal race pace. And that wasn't happenstance. It wasn't luck. It was because I spent a concerted amount of time like working on it. And it was just kind of an eye opener for me. I'm like, all right, well, if I could do this and I'm a pretty experienced runner, I feel like newer runners, more recreational runners, like if I could get them to be a little bit more patient in that approach and be like, hey, we're not going to do workouts for, you know, this period of time, but we're going to do, you know, drills, strides, short hills, like that's going to be it. That's going to be like the variety in our training, you know, plus, you know, some easy aerobic running as we build volume. I think it would go a long way. But I mean, that requires a little bit of a leap of faith, but it just requires a lot of like, you know, patience and, you know, it takes a bit more, like I'm fortunate in that, like I make my own schedule, right? So I was blocking off this time because oftentimes I had to go to the track. I had to go find the hill. I had to like make the time for drills and you can't like rush it. And I think that's where we get into trouble sometimes as runners. It's like, well, we have a set amount of time and I'd rather just run more. And I spent the time to like see if this would be worthwhile. And it totally was. Like it definitely was. I'm like, I haven't been moving this well in years. And here I am, you know, 25 years into, you know, being a competitive athlete training at a high level.
Just a quick break to thank our partner Tubefor, a powerful sports supplement made from New Zealand black currants designed to increase endurance, manage inflammation, support immunity, and promote adaptation. Tubefor helps boost performance by increasing blood flow, making it more efficient for the body to pump oxygenated, nutrient-rich blood into the muscles. Boost your performance before your next big workout and support your immune system with Tubefor's high antioxidant pre-workout. Use code Jason for 30% off their 20-pack and multi-serve packs at tubefor.com. Hey, a quick break to thank our partner Element for their support. You should check them out. Element is my favorite way to hydrate. They make a delicious, sugar-free, high-sodium electrolyte that's perfect for runners with a high sweat rate or very salty sweat like I have. Now, if that's you, you're going to want all 1,000 milligrams of sodium that's included in Element. Electrolytes play a key role in helping you avoid dehydration, dizziness, cramps, and overall tiredness, especially after long runs or workouts. And Element is used by the military, law enforcement, professional sports teams, and they're the official hydration partner of Team USA Weightlifting. Get a free sample pack with any purchase at drinklmnt.com/strengthrunning. And they'll let you try every flavor before you decide what you like best. That's drinklmnt.com/strengthrunning for your free sample pack.
Yeah, I want to double click on one thing that you said, which was this idea that a little bit goes a long way in terms of drills, strides, hills, and then of course some easy aerobic running. I actually ran my mile PR the December after I graduated college on very few really hard workouts, but I was doing a lot of that kind of work. And like you, I just felt really good running fast. I felt smooth. I felt almost effortless, although of course, you know, there was obviously a lot of effort there. And I just want to impress upon everyone that you can get a lot done with this kind of fundamental movement oriented, almost skill work.
Yeah. And especially if you pair it with just an appropriate amount of aerobic work, you know, as well to complement it. And I mean, I'll tell you this, in all my trainings on Strava, you can look at this for yourself. I did this work and then I was like, I'm going to do an 800 time trial at the end of 6 weeks, just to use that as kind of like a baseline. I did no 400. I think by that point, I had stretched out my speed development strides to 150 meter like buildups in my spikes. So that was the longest like quote unquote rep that I did. Didn't run any 200s, didn't run any 400s. And I was like, I'm going to rip the Band-Aid off. Went to the track by myself. I ripped off an 800. I went 62.63 point, ran 205, which shocked me. I thought I'm like, if I run 210, I'll be thrilled. And I went through in 62 and I was like, well, I guess this is what we're doing. And I just kept like waiting for myself to kind of like, you know, completely unravel. And it was mightily uncomfortable, but like back to form. Like I just felt like even as I came into the last 200 meters and I could feel just like lactate flooding my body and I'm starting to like, you know, tense up and do the skeleton, I'm like, I'm still moving well. Like I'm still moving really, really well. And it was just, to your point, I mean, it was just kind of reminded me, I'm like, I did that off of no specific workouts, like at all. That was like 6 weeks of relatively easy running paired with, you know, drills, hills, and strides, more or less.
Talk to me a little bit about the hills. You're running kind of like 20 to 30, 35 second hills. They're sort of like strides. Give us an idea of what that kind of workout was like from an effort perspective, what the recovery was like. You know, were you going up the steepest hill you could find, or was it more gradual hill?
Yeah, I played around with it. Ended up being a more gradual hill, and I used the same hill for all of the hill workouts that I did. But I started with 20 seconds, and I would run up at what I would call just like 90% effort, and I would walk. I basically walk back down. I would take a pretty full recovery. So I'd go up hard for 20 seconds. I didn't do anything shorter than that, but I would go up for like 20 seconds at a pretty hard effort, stop, and then basically like walk, slow jog down. It would be like, you know, a minute to a minute. Yeah, basically for the 20 second reps, it was about a minute between reps. And then I realized that where I was starting, I made a 200 meter hill. And so the longest hill I did was like 200 meters on a gradual grade. And, you know, at first I was starting those off, I was running, you know, 37 seconds or so, you know, uphill 37, 38 seconds. And, I would just kind of like walk jog back down. So it'd be like 90 seconds in between. So kind of like a 1-3 more or less like work to rest ratio type of thing. So pretty good amount of, you know, recovery. And I was doing those every week. And then eventually I would pair them where I would do like maybe six by 200 on the hill, 6x200 flat, type of deal to turn my legs over. This was after I got through like the speed development phase. I've kept the hills in like the entire time. But 200 meters is kind of the sweet spot, and just like, yeah, kind of full recovery in between. And I'd say like effort wise, it was like, you know, mile effort, type of deal. And, I was, again, just like focusing on form and being able to like hold it from start to finish and not like overcooking it in the first, you know, 10 seconds of the hill and then just be like, you know, flailing at the end, because that would kind of ruin the whole point of the workout. The point of the workout was like move well throughout the repetitions and like, let's see how that translates once, you know, once I start getting into the real work.
Yeah. And that kind of intentionality, I think, is really important when you're doing the kind of work that you've been describing, this sort of strides. And then, you know, you're talking about lengthening the strides with a little bit more of an acceleration into it. You almost defeat the purpose if you are flailing around, if you're not focused on your form, if you're not just trying to tighten everything up and run really economically. So that's something that I think everyone should be working on. I've gotten away from that, but I've been doing some shorter hill strides, and I've noticed if you can focus on it, it does improve.
Yeah. And a little goes a long way. And if you watch, like I just finished watching the NCAA track and field championships. But if you watch, you know, a marathon, the best athletes are usually the ones who are moving the best at the end too, or who look the best. You know, it's rare that you see, I mean, yeah, every once in a while, someone will put up a valiant effort and they just run out of gas, you know, 200 meters from the finish line, they hold on and it's, you know, heroic. You're like, wow, that was so cool. More often than not, you see them come through the line. They look great. Like they're just moving well, like their stride is, you know, fully, you know, intact. And that's not an accident. That's something that they've, you know, they've worked on. And, you know, it's learning how to spread your effort out during like even just these short hill sprints. And then, for me, like when I started doing more traditional intervals, and yeah, I was thinking about effort and pace, but I was also like, how am I moving, right? Like, am I stretching myself to just try and hit this number that I think I should be running? Well, yeah, I'm doing that, but my turnover's all awkward and my arms are doing like kind of like weird things. So I would check in with myself during the intervals and be like, all right, how am I moving? Even when I started progressing to doing, you know, some 400s or like faster intervals during workouts, I was like, all right, I'm going to go hard here, but I'm only going to go as hard as I can without like letting myself fall apart, you know, type of thing. And that's a good exercise, I think, for any and all runners to partake in or to think about.
Right. When you start falling apart in a workout, And I always kind of describe it as like losing control. That's when the workout stops being, you know, as beneficial as it could. And that's when your injury risk really goes up. You know, if your form is deteriorating substantially and you're running fast at some of those forces and speeds around the turn of the track, especially if you're on an indoor track where the turn is even more substantial, you know, that's where it makes me really nervous. You know, that's where I remember my coach telling people, okay, you're done. You know, you're not going to finish the workout. And I think any good coach is going to be able to identify high levels of fatigue that are contributing to that, because you don't want to keep working out through that.
100%. I mean, I've seen that with my own athletes at the track where, you know, I'll give them, say, 800 meter repeats. And just to use a round number, you know, the target was 3 minutes and they're hitting 3 minutes. And they'll come around and I see them coming off the final turn and they're just like completely flailing and falling apart and like muscling their way through. And I'll be like, you're done. What do you mean I'm done? I ran 2:59. I ran 3 minutes. Yeah, but the way that you did it was not what we were looking for. I wanted you to be running like 3 minutes, like, you know, in control. But I hit 3 minutes. Like, well, just don't be so hung up on the number. Like, I want you to think about like how you were moving, because clearly, like, that was not a sustainable effort for you. So the workout's over, you know, type of thing. And I think more amateur age group runners should think about that, like when they're in their workouts, like check in. How am I moving? You know, am I keeping a consistent rhythm? Like, do I feel like you can work hard and be relaxed? Like, those two things, you know, don't have to contradict one another. But you know, that takes time and it takes patience to develop that. But I found like doing, you know, just focused work on like, again, short sprints, short hills, drills, that sort of thing. Like when I did that 800 time trial, I didn't check my 200 split. I looked at my 400 split when I came around. I didn't check the 200. I was just like, all right, just move the way that you've been moving during like a lot of these buildups. Like, keep that effort the same. Keep that, you know, keep that rhythm familiar to you. And I came through and I was like, shit, I did not think that was a 62 second lap, like coming through. That was just really, I think, just really like validating for me to be able to do that. I'm like, wow, I just ran a 62 and it was like, I was working, it was hard, but I was like, I am not falling apart here, you know, type of thing. So
we could probably geek out on like track philosophy of workouts, yeah, and feelings for hours. I want to talk more about the workouts you did, but before, sure. I think it's helpful to know like the context in which the workouts are run, which is often your weekly mileage. You know, what is your history with overall mileage? What did you think was an appropriate amount of miles to be running per week? Yeah, just walk us through that. I'm really curious, like your thought process on it.
Yeah, this is a good question. And to the mile specifically, I mean, there's two ways to come at the mile, right? You can be a 400, 800 type of athlete that is moving on up. And usually with those athletes, they're lower overall volume. They're more, you know, fast twitch in their physiology. They have like really, you know, great speed and they respond well to that. And if you overload them with too much mileage, they just get tired and they can't access their, you know, what is their strength? And that's their speed. And the other way to come at it is from the opposite end. You're like a 3K, 5K type of runner who is dropping down and you're coming at it from more of a strength perspective, your overall volume is a little bit higher at the workouts. Like, yeah, there's some overlap between the workouts that the 400, 800 type of runner will do versus the 3K, 5K type of runner will do. But there are a lot of differences as well. I'm definitely more of the latter type. I'm that 3K, 5K type of guy who is dropping down to run the mile and coming at it from more of a strength, you know, perspective. So, you know, I did this period of speed development, but again, like that wasn't my specific training. That was speed development. That's exactly what I was focusing on for that period of time. When I was doing that, I was just starting to build my mileage back up. And it was around like 50 miles per week, give or take a couple miles, which for me is like, that's kind of my week in, week out type of mileage. It's rare that I ever dip much below that at any point of the year. And I can certainly go higher, but I don't spend too much time there when I'm higher. Once I got out of that phase, I added a bit more volume. So I got up to 60 miles per week, like fairly quickly, but the workouts got longer, you know, as well. You know, the long runs got like a little bit longer, but not, you know, not too long, but I kind of settled into like a 60 mile per week range with like a high week of, I had a couple weeks at 70 miles, and those were more an accident, I think, than anything else. It was just like me meeting up with a couple of my athletes and getting in, you know, a couple extra runs. And I was
spoken I was like a true runner, Mario. Yeah. Like, oops, I ran an extra 10 miles this week.
Yeah. But it was really like 2 weeks that I think I did that. I mean, most of my miles when I got out of that speed development phase were like right around 60 miles per week. Most of the weeks from a structural standpoint looked, you know, pretty similar. And for me, like that was Monday, and I'm someone who runs 7 days per week. Monday was always my recovery day. You know, it'd be like 4 to 5 miles, just very slow jog, oftentimes, you know, without a watch. Tuesday, you know, would be a workout day, and it was typically like the faster workout of the week once I sort of got into things. And that would be, you know, 200s, 400s, 300s, you know, up to 600s, basically, you know, at generally at a faster type of clip, like touching mile pace, you know, maybe a little bit faster for some of the short reps, maybe mixed in with some longer workouts. But I would do somewhere between, you know, I'd still do like 3 to 5 miles worth of work, but I would definitely sprinkle in some faster running. Wednesday, Thursday, you know, it'd be more of a recovery day. Friday, I would do some combination of like threshold and hills, basically. And oftentimes I'd alternate those things back and forth, where I would do, you know, like a classic tempo run followed by some short hill sprints type of thing. But I kept hills like in the rotation, you know, every week. The spring, that'd be Friday. Saturday would usually be a recovery run. Sunday, I would run like a little bit longer, and I might, you know, might run up tempo the second half, but not hard, you know, type of deal. Like I definitely wasn't jogging those, but I wasn't running hard either. It was something I could bounce back 2 days later, and be ready to get on the track and do a workout. And it totaled about, you know, 60 miles a week, most weeks. And for me, like that's a very like workable volume for me. Like I feel like I can do that, you know, for a couple of months on end before I really need to kind of take a break and dial it back.
And what do your long runs look like? Where it doesn't seem like they were super long.
Now 12 to 14 miles, at the, you know, at the most. Yeah. I had a lot of like 12 mile long runs.
Yeah. I think a lot of folks listening might be thinking you're training for a mile, you're running 60 to 70 miles a week with a 12 to 14 mile long run. That's way more volume than I do for the half marathon. You know, sure. Like I sort of know the answer to this question, but I sort of just kind of want to hear your perspective on it. Like, why run so much? Can you race a mile off low volume, even if you are that 3K, 5K, you know, strength-oriented athlete?
Yeah, you can. I just found it didn't work well for me. You know, and I mean, I ran my mile PR in college. I have the log so I can go back and look at it. I mean, I ran 74 miles that week. I ran 409 for the mile. And that was just kind of what I did. I don't run that kind of mileage anymore. Like 74 miles for me now is like, that's pretty much marathon training, you know, at this point in my life. But, you know, 60 just kind of works. Like I feel good there. Like I feel like I can get some good work in, but I recover. You know, I don't have a great answer for that other than like that works for me. And I've just been doing this long enough to know that works for me. If you're a less experienced athlete or you just don't feel like you need as much volume, you might not. I mean, but you know, you still gotta get the workouts in that you need, you know, to run fast at that type of distance.
Yeah. And I think when we think about that, and we're getting pretty granular right here, but when you think about structuring a workout and okay, you're going to have a 2 mile warm up. You're going to run 3 miles worth of intervals. You might actually get in another mile of recovery running in between all those intervals. You're going to have to do a 2 mile cool down. You know, now we're talking about at least an 8 mile run. And if you want to be able to run hard for a good chunk of an 8 mile run and not be absolutely gassed at the end, which you shouldn't be, you sort of need the volume and a somewhat decent long run, you know, over 8-9 miles to be able to support that kind of a workout. And I think that's often the issue I run into.
Yeah. And that's exactly right. I mean, all my workout days were basically between 8 and 10 miles. I mean, that's kind of where they added up to. I mean, a typical distance run day that wasn't Monday was like 6 to 8 miles. And that's just you know, that just works for me. You know, I can recover while I'm doing that. I can still like get what I need to get out of, you know, my workouts. I enjoy running that much. Like that just, it never felt like a, like I was working hard, but it never felt like a chore to me. Yeah, it worked out fine. I'm sure if I took, you know, if I took like Thursday off or something like that, I don't know that would have affected anything, but you know, I like running. So I just got out, get out and ran on Thursday. So, you know, I had friends to meet up with and things to do. So yeah, I would just do it.
Let's talk about some of the harder workouts you did. Mm-hmm. So after you've gotten up to your peak mileage level, you've done a fair amount of speed development with the strides and the hills. Now you're getting on the track. Now you're starting to touch goal pace. How do you think about structuring mile workouts, especially as a master's runner? Because, you know, I was talking to a friend of mine that you competed against, Adam Fitzgerald, from Connecticut College. And, you know, this was a couple of years ago, but we were joking around about how it's probably easier to train for a marathon than a mile at our age, because the workouts are so, we've gotten so far away from them. And it often is required that you have people around you to pace you. And it just makes those workouts go a lot easier. I'm just wondering like how you got into those workouts and structured them.
Yeah, I was fortunate in that I have a good friend, Michael Olzinski, who's kind of up for anything. And he would always join me for the Tuesday workouts. He'd come to the track with me and, you know, he would try to do the workout, even if he only, you know, sometimes he would jump in and jump out for different parts of it. Sometimes he would just go at his pace, but it was just helpful to have someone else at the track and even just to kind of warm up with. So I didn't feel like I was out there, you know, by myself. Most of my Friday workouts I did, you know, on my own. Those were those like kind of threshold hill, you know, type of combos, which, you know, was fine. I mean, I kind of did most of those workouts on the same, you know, I would take advantage of the same loop and the same hill. And I would just kind of, that was like what I did on Fridays. And for some people that might sound boring. For me, there was a lot of comfort in it. I was like, well, this is just what I do on Fridays. And I knew the loop and, you know, I could see when I was running faster than I was the week before, maybe the same effort, heart rate, that type of thing. So, you know, I have good structure to my week and I feel like that's a big part of it. And then getting into the workouts themselves, like those Tuesday workouts, again, like as a strength-based runner coming at the mile, and this goes all the way back to college, I would sometimes get hurt, but I wouldn't get as much out of the workouts when I would like overcook the speed aspect of it. And that's a tricky thing to kind of define like where that line is, but I just sort of like know where it is for myself. And so for me, it was more about sprinkling in, like I would do a lot of what were essentially like 3K, 5K type of workouts, and I'd sprinkle in a little bit of mile pace in there. So, you know, one workout that I did, like kind of one of my first, wasn't one of the first workouts, but you know, I would do this set of 400s called hammer intervals. And I would do these like back in college where you do 400s essentially in sets of three or four. You can kind of structure it however you want. And I would run the first, you know, I'd do 400 at 3K effort with a minute rest, 400, 3K effort with a minute rest, and then 400 at mile effort, and then take a longer rest, usually like 3 minutes between sets. I used to be able to do four sets of that. When I was, you know, half my age, when I was 21. And I went and I did that workout for the first time in like 20 something years. I stopped after three sets. I was like, that's good. That's enough. That took a lot out. It took a lot out of me. So I think it's knowing, you know, kind of knowing when to stop. And again, some of that is just age and experience. Like I kind of know when I'm getting up to that limit and I'm not going to cross it because I know that's when I start getting into trouble. So I would do stuff like that, like pure mile workouts where I was running like at mile pace. The volume of those workouts is going to be a bit lower. The hardest one that I did was, I did 4x600, at mile effort with a, you know, two and a half minutes recovery, in between. And I was like, that's a hard workout.
I'm having a physiological reaction to even hearing about this workout, Mario. Yeah.
Well, I did that. And then one thing I experiment on myself a lot. And I mean, you know, I would, again, I respond well to just like kind of volume and threshold type of work. So I would, you know, even that workout, I do 4x600s, 2,400 meters of work, which is not a lot of work. But I would throw on like three by a K at tempo, you know, at the end type of thing, or two by a mile, you know, kind of at tempo, you know, and I use that as like, you know, way to like just layer in some strength, but also kind of like flush some of that junk out of my legs before I would like start my cool. And I still got some like volume in for the workout, and like I didn't not address the strength component thing. I just found like that kind of stuff, you know, sort of works for me. Or I would do, you know, I would do like 1K repeats where, you know, I'd get out hard for 200, I'd kind of cruise for 600, and then I would kick hard for, you know, 200, like type of thing. So I'd only be really running fast at the beginning or the end, you know, in the middle, I was kind of more in like, more of like a steady groove. So I wasn't, you know, I wasn't overdoing the speed stuff. And that was, you know, I think important, one, just to keep me healthy. But two, when I, you know, I remember in college, like at the end of the season, I'd be done my individual events and I'd be on our 4x800 team. Right. And I was the, you know, now I'm the miler dropping down, not the 5K, 3K, 5K guy who dropped down to the mile was dropping down to the 800. And I would jump in with the pure 800 runners and we'd be ripping off, you know, 200s, super fast. And like those, they weren't high volume workouts, but they crushed me. Like I would go into the race or, you know, the next workout, like feeling really, really flat. So I've just learned about myself over the years. Like I don't need to do a whole lot of that, like super fast stuff where I'm really overcooking it. I just need to like touch it and remind myself of like what that, you know, what that feels like. But, you know, my strength goes a long way, you know, especially for me when it comes to the mile.
Would you say as a general rule for masters runners and almost for anyone that if you are looking at these kinds of hard workouts, which might be described as a more VO2 max oriented workout where you're doing a repetition that's, you know, 2 to 4 minutes or so, this is the kind of work where you should be the most cautious and conservative with, because I think here is where, you know, it's less fundamental, you know, strides fundamental, a long run or overall mileage, I think is fundamental. Whereas these kinds of really hard VO2 max workouts, it's a little bit like the icing on the cake, and the injury risk with this kind of work is higher than almost anything else you can do as a runner. You know, what is your perspective on, you know, this for the broader population?
Yeah, it's where a lot of people get into trouble, because I think especially as Americans, maybe this is a global problem, but certainly as Americans, like we really want to be sure that we nailed it. So like if there's any little bit of doubt, what are we going to do? We're going to push harder, right? So if, you know, if you have kind of classic VO2 max workout, like 3 minute reps type of thing, you know, you might be running pretty hard, but you're like, I don't know if I'm running hard enough. So I'm just going to push it like a little bit more here in the last minute. That's where you have to trust yourself. Be like, no, I got the effort right. Like I'm fine. You overcooking it in that last minute. Then you go into the next rep feeling a bit more tired, and like that's going to compound over the course of the workout. And then you get yourself into trouble. It's like, no, just trust it that you've got the effort right. And again, like that'll take some trial and error if you're a newer runner, you know, to get that right. But I feel like people just push a bit too hard, you know, on those types of workouts. And that's kind of been ingrained in our head. It's like, oh, well, you know, just push like a little bit harder. It's like, no, like make sure you're working hard, but like only work as hard as you have to type of philosophy, rather than just being like, well, I really want to make sure that I nailed this workout. So, you know, I got it 10 seconds under pace, type of thing. I think of that as like, you know, it's like when you're using a drill and you're like screwing something in, it's like, well, what happens if you screw it in too tight? Like you strip the screw and then you can't get it out and then you're kind of hosed. And that's the same sort of thing with like those VO2 max workouts. Like people just tighten the screw too much. And then it gets, you know, it gets really hard to unwind that. So it's like, just make sure it's tight enough, but don't overcook it.
That is such great advice. Yeah. And I think, you know, hearing what you said earlier about, you know, I wanted to touch mile pace. And you describing workouts where you might go out hard, but then you're cruising for a little while and then you close hard. Not every workout has to be, you know, this test of your fitness. And I think that's where we often run into problems. Like the race is the test. The training is the studying. You very rarely should ever be taking the test during training.
No, I mean, training is where you are working to improve. Racing is where you prove that fitness. So, I mean, just using that as a very simple like delineator between it. You're not trying to prove anything in a workout. Save that for race day. Training is where you're trying to improve. Improvement might mean making mistakes from time to time, but you know, the point is to learn as you go, and make adjustments, you know, along the way, and take that knowledge from the workout into the, you know, into the next workout, and make, you know, make adjustments and like, you know, build your capacity, like all of, you know, all of those types of things. But you're not there to, you're not there to prove anything, you know, in the workout. Like, save that for race day. I mean, the worst thing as a coach is when you have the workout heroes who hit, you know, hit or beat, you know, 90 to 100% of their workouts, and then they, you know, crap the bed on race day. I don't want to see that. I'd rather have you hit like 80 to 90% of your workouts and like, you know, hit it out, you know, hit it 100% on race day. Like that's the way to do it. I mean, you know, I close with Mark Coogan, coach of New Balance Boston, had him on my podcast a couple times. He calls them B plus workouts, you know, and he says with his team, and he's coach of some of the best 1500 meter runners in the world. I mean, he's got the reigning indoor world champion in Ellie Parier St. Pierre. He says, I'd rather have 10 weeks of B plus workouts, which is often going to lead to an A plus race, than to have, you know, a handful of A plus workouts over the course of, you know, 10 weeks and then a crappy race, you know, type of thing. And that's really, you know, whether you're an elite like he coaches, or you're just the amateur age group athlete listening to this, like that is the way. You know, it's like just strive for those like B plus type of workouts.
All right, Mario, the moment we've all been waiting for. Let's talk about the race itself.
Okay.
So you are gunning for a national championship, the Masters Mile. How did it go down? Talk to us about, you know, the pre-race. I mean, you must be a little nervous. Like I know that at this age, I am of a certain age, Mario, where lining up on a track or for any sort of middle distance race is kind of terrifying at this point. So, you know, were you cool, calm, and collected, feeling good ahead of the race? And how did it start?
I was trying to stay as cool, calm, and collected as I could. But part of what I love about the mile, it's, you know, and for me, it's like, this is the ultimate event. Like it really makes the hair stand up on the back of your neck, whether it's a road mile or whether it's, you know, on the track, because I think, you know, especially if you've done it before, like, you know how intense it's going to be. And that's an intensity from like the effort standpoint, but also, you know, you're close to your competitors almost the entire time. You know, seconds count, half seconds count, every little bit counts. And I was kind of feeling that. I was like, okay, this is going to be a pressure cooker of, you know, of a race, because we're going to be out here for somewhere around like 4.5 minutes or so. You know, the difference between, you know, first, second, third, fourth, fifth place is going to be like a matter of seconds, you know. So it's like I've got to be on my game. I've got to be present, and I need to minimize the mistakes. Like one mistake could, you know, cost me the entire race. So I'm thinking about like all of those things, but at the same time, I'm like just focusing on myself and being present and controlling what I can control. Cause I can't, you know, I can't do anything about what the competitors are doing. I can only control like my mental outlook on the race. I can control the effort that I'm putting out. I can control the moves that I decide to go with or to let go, type of thing. So I was just really trying to be as present as possible as I stepped up to the start line.
Did you purely compete for place, or did you have some idea of a time in your mind that you would either have to run or you were hoping to get under a certain time? What was your relationship to that?
Yeah. So going into the race, I thought it would take somewhere between 4:30 and 4:40 to win this particular race. But I didn't wear a watch. I took my watch off after my warm up. I left it in my bag, and that was intentional because I didn't care. It was going to take what it was going to take. And
if you should be checking your watch in a mile. No way.
And if it was going to be a 4:30 race, like that's what it was going to take. And if it was going to go out a little bit slower and turn into something fast at the end, that's fine too. So that's the mentality that I took into the race. I said to myself, like, it takes what it takes. And the time didn't matter. And so I left my watch at my, you know, at my bag, and I was focused purely on competing, because my personal goal for that race was to win. And I felt like I had a shot, and I was going to make the decisions that I needed to make to give myself the best shot to win the race.
So how did it start? I'd love to know, like, if you remember the opening 400 split, Was there a lot of jockeying? You know, are older guys really aggressive on the track like younger guys, or are they more polite? Like, how does that all work?
So this particular race, this was the Road Mile Championships. And so we were on a two-loop road course. It was not on a track. So it was a bigger field because they had separate races for the 40 to 59 age group for men and then 60 plus. So they had 40 to 59 all lumped. So there were, you know, 100 of us on the start line, like a road race on a pretty tight two loop course. So we were across the road, and then, yeah, it was a lot of jockeying for position the first mile, not quite as tight as a track, but you still wanted to, you know, be on the inside. If you could, you wanted to avoid unnecessary contact, and you definitely didn't want to go down. So it got off the line pretty quick, and a gentleman from Colorado actually got out front. His name is escaping me here at the moment, but you know, he got out front and he was moving pretty well. And I just tucked in behind him and I was like, well, we're moving fast enough right now. Like, I definitely don't need to be in the lead, you know, at this point. And I just tried to maintain contact. So we had a two loop course, but there were markers every quarter mile. I did not hear a quarter mile split. We came back around and we approached halfway, and I was running in second place, and I do have a photo of it that someone took. I was probably a second and a half, like 2 seconds back, at halfway. And I wasn't looking behind me, but I knew there was just a stream of guys behind me. And again, it's like, if you let off the gas for a second or two, like someone's going to pass you. But it felt like it was a very honest, like fast, you know, fast pace. And as we approached, you know, halfway, you know, they rang the bell signaling like one full lap to go, but it was a half mile at that point. And, the guy who was, you know, who was leading the race, he put the pedal down to the floor and definitely made a move at that point. And he created a little bit more space, and I was like, I got to make a decision right now. I either go with that move if I want to try to win the race, or I hang back here, let things kind of develop and save something. Like, I'm going to run for second, basically. And I wasn't there to run for second. So I made the decision in the third quarter of the race to try and close that gap. And I burned most of my book of matches on that third quarter. I mean, I just like, I put a lot into it. I got to three quarters of a mile. I was still in second place, but I was not gaining any ground really at all, on the gentleman in first. And then we had two turns left, and then basically like, you know, 200 meters to the finish. So we came around the final two turns. I was still in second place. We went by the 200 meters to go mark. I was still running in second place, but I could feel myself just tying up. Like, I could just feel myself like tying up. My stride was starting to shorten, and I felt like I was in quicksand at that point. And a guy named Grant Johnson went by me with maybe 175 meters to go, and you know, pulled away. And I had that feeling, not to let my mind slip to a negative spot, but I was just moving so slow. I was like, the whole field's going to go by me right now. I am moving so slow. And I was, I definitely like, I again, burned my whole book of matches on that third quarter, trying to see if I could like latch on and close that gap, which I couldn't. But I held on for third. No one else passed me at that point. Just Grant did. The guy who won, he ended up leading wire to wire. The next place behind me was, I think, like 3 or 4 seconds. And I ended up running, like, my time was like 440 point something. Which on the roads, they round up to 441. So, you know, the time was what it was going to be. I definitely was running much faster than that for the first three quarters of the race, but you know, I ran straight into the wall, and I'm sure I gave back quite a bit of time on that last quarter. It would have been interesting to see my splits. I don't need to, but I know I definitely lost it. Like, that last quarter was just, you know, it was kind of ugly. But
yeah, like, the track nerd in me wants to see like all of your 200 meter splits and how they, you know, evolved over the course of the race. What did the winner run?
He ended up running he was 431.
Okay.
So, I mean, I know, again, I have like a photo of, you know, us going through the lap to go, which is essentially halfway. And, you know, I was 2 seconds might have been, I was like a second and a half, you know, behind him at that point. So, and again, even at three quarters, he wasn't that far ahead of me, maybe like 3 seconds, 4 seconds, ended up finishing like 9 seconds in front of me. And that was, most of that was in the last like 400 meters. And then someone else took a photo of like Grant going by me on the left. And I just kind of like looked over and I had, you know, no response at that point, but that's how it goes sometimes.
As someone who has raced so many miles, I am very impressed by you making a move with the leader at the halfway point. I mean, that is a very aggressive point in the mile to start picking up the pace and to start hammering, because you're not even close to being done.
Yeah. Well, he made the move. I had to decide whether or not I was going to go with it.
Right.
And if I didn't go with it, there was no chance I was going to win the race. And if I had any chance of winning the race, because I didn't know if he was just like playing with the field and like, I'm going to throw in a fast, like 100, 200 meters, see who comes with me. No, he clearly had a lot left in the tank. And, you know, I wrote this in my newsletter, there was probably no circumstance in which I was going to beat him, you know, on that day. I do feel very confident if I had made the decision at that point to not go with the move and just like try to control the race that was happening behind me, I feel very confident that I would have finished second, because I would have had plenty of gas in the tank to kind of close things out. But I mean, I freaking went for it in that third quarter. And I knew, I was like, this is going to end one of two ways. I'm either going to like get up on his shoulder and he's going to be like, shit, he came with me. I'm in a race, or he's just going to keep pulling away because he clearly spread himself, knew what he was doing out front, spread himself out well. And that ended up being the case. I mean, he had, you know, he ran a great race, and I probably was not going to beat him under any circumstance on that day. But I'm proud of how I raced. I wouldn't have done anything differently. I mean, you know, I went in with the goal of trying to win, and I made the moves that I had to make to try and win. It just, you know, just wasn't going to be my day. So I can live with that, you know, with that effort and the decisions that I made. I mean, it was in contrast, I did run a track mile, Masters track mile, maybe like a month before that. A month, 5 weeks before that. And it was kind of the complete opposite, where, you know, no one wanted to take the lead. And I found myself, you know, in front, you know, 100 meters into the race. And I ended up leading, you know, every step. And I felt like I was running, you know, a 3K through three quarters, and then, you know, dropped like a 63 and change on the last lap type of thing. Who's the opposite, you know, type of race. So I was kind of ready for it to go however it went. But on, you know, on that day, you know, I wasn't, you know, I didn't have Neil McDonough was the guy who won the race. Now his name came to me. I wasn't going to beat Neil on that day. You know, he was just, you know, he was just stronger. So
I'm curious how many, tune-up races you ran ahead of time. 'Cause I don't know if you're like me, but I always felt very rusty when it came to the shorter, faster races. Like, let's say at the beginning of indoor track in college. And it took me a couple at bats to get my legs underneath me, to be able to control some of those nerves, and just to really, like, you know, fully take advantage of the opportunity of racing. And I'm just wondering, you know, how many tune-up races you ran, because I'm sure you didn't just line up once or twice that season, right?
Yeah, not enough miles or 800s. And if I could have done it differently, I would have, but the schedule just didn't really allow for me to do that. So I ran a 10K in March. I ran a track mile at the end of March. I ran a road 5K in mid-April, and then this was mid-May. And I would have loved to, between that 5K and the road mile, I would have loved to have run, you know, another mile or 1500, or, you know, even an 800, just to kind of like blow out the tubes and work on tactics. But the schedule just didn't, you know, allow for that. And that's one of the tough things about being a miler in your 40s. There aren't as many opportunities to, you know, to race as when you're younger, or a collegiate athlete, that type of thing. I wish I could have had a couple more opportunities to just sharpen up, you know, ahead of that. And but it wasn't in the cards.
We need more track meets for grownups, Mario. I think that'd be a great idea.
Yeah, I mean, there are open meets, but a lot of them aren't until end of summer, right? And, you know, it's to go from like January, when I kind of started training, to Masters Nationals in track is at the end of July, which I'm still hoping to do. And it's hard to go that long without a break. And I, you know, for better or worse, like June's going to be a bit of a break for me. I have just some family things going on that we need to work through and some travel around that. And like my training is going to take a backseat, you know, in June, but it should be able to kind of pick back up again at the end of June. I'll have like 3 or 4 weeks before Masters Track Nationals at the end of July. And I don't know that I'll have other opportunities to really race before Masters Track Nationals, but I might have to, you know, recruit my buddy Mikey and a couple other friends to, you know, we'll have like an 800 time trial or 1500 time trial, you know, type of thing before I go to that meet. But the opportunities they're out there, but they're, you know, they're kind of spread out, and you know, you got to know where to look for them.
Well, Mario, I am now so motivated and inspired to go race some really short, fast events. I think it's really good, especially for us masters runners, to get back into that and experience that. The tactics, the strategy, but also just the workouts, the physiology of training for these races, I think is so good for us at this age.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. I love the training for it. You know, it was just fun to kind of be my own guinea pig in a way and like experiment with some things. And I love doing the short hills. It was fun for me going to the track and just putting my spikes on and like doing, you know, some short sprints. I would say I'm playing track, you know, for me, I was just like playing track. And, you know, I'm not as fast as I was, you know, 20 years ago, like not even close, but I am definitely having more fun with it. And for me, especially at this age, if it's not fun, like, why am I going to waste my time, and do it? So the whole process has been, you know, a lot of fun. And I look forward to just, you know, continuing to follow my curiosity and seeing what's possible as I, you know, get even older than I am now.
Well, it's very inspiring. Best of luck with the almost the second Masters Championship coming up in July. That's going to be really fun. I definitely recommend everyone follow you on Strava so that they can check out your training. You know, full disclosure, I was checking out your training and following it in with great curiosity because I was just curious how you were going about this whole project of racing a very fast mile at 42. And yeah, it's just so amazing to get back to that speed oriented area where you're playing with just running so fast. And I'm glad you used that. I was playing track. You know, it doesn't necessarily mean it's hard. It just means it's fast. And you can do that in a way that is sustainable and fun, frankly.
Yeah, very well said.
All right, Mario. I know we went really long. I'm so appreciative of your time, but I just had to get the whole story of you going after this mile championship. Where can folks connect with you? I know the Morning Shakeout is something that I've subscribed to for years. It's a wonderful newsletter for running fans everywhere. But is there anywhere else that you want to point folks to?
Yeah, first, just thanks for having me. Always enjoy our conversation, especially when we get to geek out about this kind of stuff. And for anyone who wants to follow me, the best place is probably the Morning Shakeout email newsletter, which comes out every Tuesday. You can sign up for it at themorningshakeout.com/subscribe. As you said, you can follow me on Strava. All of my training for the past 10 years plus is on there. So have fun pouring through it. I got nothing to hide. If you have any questions, you can always ask. And then I also occasionally post to Instagram, just at my name, at Mario Fraioli. And those are probably, yeah, all the best ways to keep tabs on me.
Wonderful. We will be keeping tabs on you, Mario. All those links are in the description of the podcast episode. You can check those out. Thanks again, Mario.
Thanks, Jason.
What an episode. Thank you so much for listening and being part of our community here. If you're getting value from the Strength Running Podcast, if the show has helped your running or made you rethink how you approach your training, please consider leaving a review or a rating in Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen. Those reviews are incredibly impactful and helpful for this small business. If you have questions about your running, feel free to email me at support@strengthrunning.com, or you can search our website at strengthrunning.com. For more digestible tips, videos, memes, and more, follow me on Instagram at JasonFitz1. We'll be in touch. I am so grateful for the support of AG1, the health and wellness company that makes comprehensive daily nutrition super simple. Now, I am a man of convenience, which means I don't always choose the healthiest foods, but I also know that I need my body firing on all cylinders to be the best coach, runner, podcast host, and dad that I can be.
So I'm finding their product, AG1, really helpful to help optimize my health by giving my body what it needs. You can learn more about it at drinkag1.com/Jason. One scoop gives me 75 vitamins, minerals, and whole food sourced ingredients, including a green superfood blend, probiotics, prebiotics, adaptogens, and more. AG1 helps me fill in any nutrition gaps in my diet, because let's face it, my friends, there are some gaps, and it gives me a nice boost of energy and focus throughout the day. And with three kids in elementary school, I know I've got to support my immune system because I'm no match for little kid germs. But what I really love about AG1 is that it changes. Over the last decade, they've made over 50 different improvements to the formula based on the latest research so that there are more nutrients and they are more available for your body to absorb. AG1 is certified for quality and safety by NSF International and is NSF certified for sport, meaning it does not contain any of the more than 270 substances that are banned by professional sports organizations. Go to drinkag1.com/Jason to see the great offer they've put together for our podcast listeners. You're going to get a year's worth of free vitamin D and five free travel packs of AG1 with your first purchase. You can sign up for a single shipment or for a monthly drop if you want to make AG1 a part of your regular healthy lifestyle. Go to drinkag1.com/Jason to sign up today.